Everybody, welcome back to the Badgerland Birding Podcast, bringing you birding news and stories from the Badger State and beyond. Today, we're with our friend Rachel Clark, who's a guide out in California. Rachel, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you guys?
We're doing good. We got hammered by snow the last couple days, so it's like a whole new place here. It's a winter wonderland.
It is.
Oh wow. So are you guys, I'm sitting here in sunny central, well, okay, not sunny, but here in by contrast, much warmer central California, where I can have the option of driving to the snow and driving away from it, so I can't really relate. At the moment. So are you guys pretty much confined to your home or?
Okay, you might have oversold the amount of snow a little
Well, we
bit.
power
Oh,
went
okay.
out a couple times. And
Oh,
then
okay.
so basically we got a ton of snow. Schools closed.
Yeah, school's closed for like 1 or 2 days. We got probably like, what do you think, 2 feet, slightly less than 2 feet of
Let
snow.
like one, yeah, one and
One
a
and a
half
half to
feet.
2 feet in like a very quick amount of time when we had not really had any snow the whole year. And then we went into a deep freeze. So it went
Oh, wow,
boom,
okay.
packing snow, like wet snow, sticking to the trees, and then boom, like negative 15 degrees.
Oh, I don't envy you.
Yeah,
Not
so
one bit. No,
we
thank
didn't have
you.
a lot of snow all season, and then it just hit all at once. So it's kind of been an adjustment for everyone to get out their really cold weather gear and shovel and do all
Oh, wow. Yeah, that does not sound like fun. I'm not even gonna lie.
that.
I'm
Kind of talking about
glad
the
I don't have to
snow
contend
though,
with them.
it reminds me of when we hiked up to the Sierra Nevada mountains to try to find the Williamson sapsucker, and the snow was like 10 feet or more.
Yeah, it's
Oh,
not
my
10 feet
God.
or more, but yeah. It feels similar to that. So going back to kind of the California side of things, like what kind of stuff have you been seeing lately?
Lately, trying to think. So I co-led a birding tour about 2 months ago. I mean, we went all over the place. We hit up several of my local hotspots here. I'm in Fresno County. We got a lot of the usual suspects. Of course, like a lot of the oak woodland specialties, like acorn woodpeckers, oak titmice, nettles woodpeckers. And that list kind of goes on. And then we went to several coastal locations. Kind of more desert locations. I mean, it was great. We went all over the place. People got to see some great things. I think there was one person on the tour who, granted, she was much newer to birding, so she had seen a far less than anyone else on the tour had seen. So I think she got up to 75 lifers, but it was great. One of the places we went to was Pinnacles National Park, which is known for its population of California condors. So I think for virtually everyone on the tour, save for maybe two or three people, I mean, that was a lifer. So, yeah, that was a great experience. I think all in all told, I think we had, I'd have to go back and look at the list. I think we had maybe 128 species or somewhere thereabouts. And then I did some guiding a few weeks later. Actually, I went back to Point Lobos, one of the places I went with you guys. God, it was pretty amazing. A client, she was from Maryland, if I remember correctly, and she wanted to see Hutton's Vireo, Chestnut-backed Chickadee, and Townsend's Warbler.
That
And
sounds
we went up that.
familiar.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, except yeah, Townsend's Warblers weren't there, when I went there with you guys, but they certainly were, because they're more of a wintertime thing there, along the coast, well, in California anyway. And immediately upon entering that trail, the exact same one I walked on with you guys, there were chestnut-backed chickadees calling, Hutton's vireos, and there were probably like three or four Townsend's warblers just in this one spot. So, I mean, and she was just tickled pink by the whole experience. I mean, it was just great, just to see her joy. Then a few weeks after that, let's see. I organized the Lost Lake Christmas bird count, which is the well, essentially the Fresno area Christmas bird count. That was great. I think we got somewhere, I'll have to go back and look at the numbers. I think we got somewhere around 127 species. Nothing super rare, but we did get a lot of exciting stuff. Lewis's woodpecker, ferruginous hawks, of course, lots of rock and canyon wrens, and so many more. I'd have to sit there and look at the list, but we'd be here all night. We don't have time for that. So, but other
Yeah.
than that, I'll be honest, I haven't done a heck of a lot of birding just on my own lately. I've been so caught up in, just trying to build the business. I stepped down from my role as president of Fresno Audubon to devote more time to building my business. So that's kind of been my main concentration in recent weeks, which unfortunately has kind of kept me inside a lot more than I.
That's yeah. kind of a same for us to a degree, is that we went out for the first of the year birding challenge. I don't think I've gone out like specifically birding anywhere since, but I have been desperately trying to get good videos of the starlings that are by the bird feeder because I'm making a starling video. So that's the most that I've done lately is make videos and get starling videos.
Yeah, he's been super into the starlings. He's just like, oh man, is there one outside? I got to go out.
That's true.
Soon as he goes out there, I'll leave.
I have like a new appreciation for them actually because the video. Because it won't be out for a while yet, so people are listening and getting a sneak preview. I made a video about how the house sparrow got to America, which is kind of a fascinating story about, you know, acclimatization societies and individual people that were just like, we should have these here and just let them go, essentially. So I decided to do the same thing with starlings. And so I did a lot of deep research on how the starling arrived in America, and I've needed a ton of videos about it. So that's what I've been trying to do. So like today I tried to use my car as a blind, like I just parked it right next to the feeder. And that kind of worked to a degree, so that was exciting for me, but that's the extent of what I've done lately.
What a year.
What a year.
But going back to kind of, you know, the business and everything, and we went out to California, did a lot of birding with you. It was super fun. We got to experience all these different environments and new birds for the first time, and one of the cool ones was the Canyon Run, and we released the video birding at Millerton Lake State Park, or State Recreation Area, I think. But we saw the Canyon Run there, and somebody commented on the video. They were like, are all wrens sassy? And I was like, I feel like they are. I don't think I've seen a wren where I'm like, that guy seems casual. They always seem like they're fired up about something.
That's the vibe they give off.
Yeah, you know, come to think of it, every wren species I've ever encountered, they've all had some degree of attitude, you know, some a little more so than others, you know, but even that tiny little Pacific wren, they, you know, they have a lot to say. They really do. When they're calling at you, you know, from those ferns in the Pacific Northwest, you know, they've got, you know, like, you know, they're there. They don't like to make themselves seen a lot, but they make their presence known. I mean, they got plenty of spunk. So yeah, I don't think I know of any mild-mannered, unsassy wrens.
What do you think their problem is? Where do they get off?
You know, I don't know. I think it depends on the species. The Pacific wrens, I think they might be a little mad because they live in these areas that are just like perpetually rainy and cloudy. You know, maybe they're just really sad and acting out. I don't know.
I feel like they also have sass in different ways too. Actually, like they'll come yell at you, and then when you want to see them, they'll give you the silent treatment.
Yeah, they remind me of the tiny dogs that bark the loudest or take on the really big dogs because, like, they think that they're much larger than they actually are.
Yes, yes. Wrens definitely have Chihuahua syndrome.
Definitely, 100%.
Little man syndrome. Yes. The wrens, even the Carolina wren, which is beefy.
But yeah, and you've been dedicating more time to the guiding business. Central California Birding Tours is where people can find you. What's it been kind of growing that in that Fresno, Central California area? Because we were mentioning like in South Texas, the infrastructure's there. People know people are there to see birds, where in Central California, maybe it's not as much of a tourist destination. What has it been like trying to build that in kind of a new area for birding tourism?
It's been challenging. I'm not going to lie. And that's, you know, kind of what you're talking about right there. The fact that I, you know, this is Central California, even though, I mean, there's a lot of amazing stuff to see out here. There's lots of Western specialties, you know, on the valley floor, coast, in the mountains, and in the desert. There's a ton to see here. This isn't what I'd refer to as a birding mecca. It's not one of those places where, you know, people think of, you know, where in the U.S. do you need to go to find all these amazing species? You know, you think of places like, of course, Southern Texas, Southeast Arizona, you know, maybe like, you know, Southern Florida. But Central California really isn't one of those places that, you know, gets mentioned. But there really is a lot to see here, you know, as you guys experienced. So it has been challenging. And I'll admit that I don't really have any sort of business or marketing background. So that's kind of compounding the difficulty. So what I'm doing now, and I'm kind of I'm kind of trying to balance things between diving head first and falling on my face and, you know, going too slow. And I'll admit I'm kind of fumbling my way through the process, but I'm trying to, I guess the number one thing I'm trying to do is find a way to market to people that are visiting Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Parks, because those are, you know, world-renowned destinations. They may not be world-renowned for birding, but there's some amazing stuff to see there. You know, and you get people coming there from all over the globe, you know, wanting to see different things. So I think if I can tap into that market, I think I'll have a lot more success and definitely grow more quickly. I guess my main hurdle right now is trying to figure out how to tap into that market. And beyond that, you know, I'm just trying to figure out where best to advertise. And another thing I'm doing too is I'm on social media, you know, I'm creating, you know, short form content that showcases, you know, who I am, where I'm from, what I can show you, and just, you know, finding ways to engage with people that way. I mean, it's been, like I said, it's, you know, this isn't a birding mecca, so it has been challenging, you know, that, and, you know, in concert with the fact that I, you know, I don't have any sort of, you know, business or marketing background, but I do believe that if I keep plugging on and, you know, working at it, chipping away, I will make this successful. Like I said, I started the business a little over 7 months ago, and it has been, or actually nearly 7 months ago. And I knew, especially in the first year, it would be a little slow, and it has been, but I do have some clients signed up for later in the year, and I hope to build on that in the coming weeks and months.
We were talking the other day about kind of the regions that one would need to hit to see all of the birds in continental USA. And we were thinking somewhere in the Pacific Northwest kind of has to be included, especially like the northern central California area, because there's so many interesting birds there that you don't get, you know, anywhere east of the mountains. So what are some of the species that you would say are like the big draws that people want to see there? You know, that like the California endemics, the ones that you can only get in that area that you're in.
Oh, gosh. So as far as California endemics, well, of course, the yellow-billed magpie. That's one, you know, you need to come here to California for. And there aren't necessarily a whole heck of a lot of endemics here. I think it's more just species that are just very range restricted, and this is one of the best places to come to see them. Like, you find them only here, you know, certain habitats here in California, and then maybe a little bit into Baja California, maybe a little bit into Oregon, and that's it. You know, species like Nuttall's woodpecker is a really good example of that. What else? I mean, there's so many. I'm just like sitting here drawing a blank. I feel like I need a bird book in front of me to flip through and like think of all these species, but there's so many, like I said, that are just so range restricted, or, you know, really patchily distributed, you know, throughout the far west. You know, you've got like, you know, pygmy nuthatch, white-headed woodpecker, yeah. So many species like that. And I know there's a ton of stuff along the coast too that, you know, it's tough to find elsewhere, you know, like Ridgway's rail, you know, being a really good example of that. I mean, this is just one of those places where, you know, they're, you know, such a large state, you know, it stretches so far from north to south, and there's such a diversity of habitats and so many specialties out here. I mean, it's just wonderful. This is a great place for, you know, someone who's not from here and is looking to build up their life list. I mean, this is a great place. This would be a great place for them to visit for sure.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things, well, I personally kind of appreciated that it wasn't necessarily built up for birding. Like, and I think it's a great idea to tap into the tourism that's already going on there. But I kind of like that we would go to these places and we would be like the only people birding, because sometimes it does get a little overwhelming if you're in like one of those places where everybody's just there for birding. There's like 40 people looking at one bird. It was kind of nice to go off to like these forests on our own and be like, we're looking for a species and we're the only people kind of doing it. And I really appreciated the variety of habitats we could visit, because like one day we were in the mountainous areas, the next day we were in the forest, the next day we were in like the desert, then we were on the coast. So there really are a lot of different habitats you can hit from a centralized location there.
Yeah. And for those of you listening that don't know already, we went out there and birded with Rachel for like a little over a week, I think it was. And we just had a great time, and we have tons of videos about it. She took us everywhere, showed us the best spots, got us pretty much like all of our target species that we wanted to get. And I think to your point, Derek, if we didn't have Rachel with us, we would have probably had a pretty tough time figuring out exactly where to go to find some of that stuff. Because we like basically made a list of like, we want this stuff. And then Rachel was like, yep, we can get that here. We can get that here. We can get that here. We probably can't get that here. Sasquatch, we might be able to get that.
We did not.
What was my line? I can't slap a guarantee on that.
Yeah, I can't guarantee it. It was like the same as all the other birds. It was like, can we get Clark's Nutcracker? Probably, but I can't guarantee it. And then we were like, can we see a Sasquatch? And you're like, I can't guarantee it.
But I think when we were birding with you, one of the things I was most impressed with was your birding by ear skills. Because we would hear something and just be like, oh, that's this. It would be so like immediate. And that's something that I really admire in birders is their ear skills, because that takes a long time to get all that down.
Well, I remember like the first place we went to was actually on the way into Kings Canyon. We stopped at that pull off, and that's where we had the maybe Townsend's warbler, maybe black-throated gray warbler. It was like making that goofy call. But you picked out like 16 different birds, like several would be lifers for us that we want to get videos of. But you're like, the canyon ends up there. I forgot some of the other
stuff. There was a quail.
Yeah, the California quail, the Chicago call. Is up.
Hey!
Cat on the screen. Everybody that has a pet, we always have to make them. If the pet's around, you have to show it to the audience.
Yeah, so, this is Lewis, named after the Lewis's woodpecker.
Perfect.
Even though the Lewis's woodpecker is soon to be renamed, I don't think I'm going to rename this guy just because, even though I never call him by his name, he has all sorts of nicknames. Okay, he says that he doesn't want any more of that. I'm going to keep his name the same. And I apologize for anything he does. He tends to be really disruptive during Zoom meetings. So I apologize in advance for anything he does.
He's like, this is my time to shine.
Yeah, you know, I remember that particular stop, and that has kind of haunted me ever since, the black-throated gray / Townsend's conundrum, because I remember Merlin picking up both.
Yeah.
And... You know, song-wise, I really could have gone either way. But in retrospect, you know, based on the time of year and the location, just the overall habitat, I'd be willing to bet that was black-throated gray because that was a more oak-dominated habitat. But I will say, you know, that Townsend's warblers have been documented in the Sierra. You know, every month of the year, breeding has never been documented by the species, at least the last I read into that. But if I had to bet, I'd say that was probably black-throated gray. But we will never know for sure. It shall forever remain a mystery.
I still have I have a recording of it. I'd be curious just to post on a group and see what other people chime in with. But how did you, was there a certain thing you did to train your ear skills so well, or is it just from being out in the field so much?
It's a number of things, but I'd say primarily probably just being out in the field so much and chasing down sounds. So I was living in the Midwest when I started birding again as an adult, and that's what I did out there. I would hear all these different sounds and, you know, initially had no idea, you know, what the source was other than it was a bird. And so I was tenacious in finding out what the source of the sound was. So I would, crawl through mud and weeds, to see what it was. I would walk up hills, probably did a few things I probably shouldn't have done, but I was tenacious. I wanted to know what it was making that noise. And, you know, Merlin wasn't around at that time. So I, you know, had no choice. You know, if I wanted to learn and get good at it, that's what I had to do. So that's what I did in the Midwest. Here, I'd say a lot of the same, but there was one summer, and over 6 years ago, I did a survey job in the Institute for Bird Populations. I was a black-backed woodpecker survey biologist, and they gave us these recordings of all these different Sierra birds that we'd need to be familiar with, for the field season. And I already knew a great deal of them, but I went through those recordings time and time and time and time again. I just, you know, really went out of my way to just make sure that was ingrained. And so I think that really helped a lot. And of course, since then, you know, of course, I live really close to the Sierras. I'm here in the heart of the San Joaquin Valley. So depending on the location, you know, it's maybe an hour drive. So it's a place I spend a lot of time, you know, during the breeding season, and I get to hear all these over and over again. So at this point, it's pretty ingrained.
What era was that? Was that like a CD kind of thing, or was it like cassette tape?
No, it was just a big old audio file that I downloaded to my phone, and you know, took up tons of space, but I didn't mind.
It's like I can't call anyone, but I can show you what a woodpecker sounds.
How you talked
yeah,
about
I
how
care more
Merlin
about the
wasn't
bird
around.
calls.
You're like, I am Merlin now.
Yeah, so for people who might be unfamiliar, there's an app called the Merlin Bird ID app, and basically you just tap Sound ID and it'll try to tell you what birds are calling and making noises in the area. Sometimes it's off, so it should be taken with a grain of salt, but it makes trying to identify birds a lot easier. But back in the day, none of that existed, so you just kind of had to wonder or go find it and then learn what it was.
Yeah, PSA, don't trust Merlin on your Vireos.
There's
Do
a
your
couple
due
different
diligence
things
on the Vireos.
That you shouldn't trust Merlin on, but most things, actually.
So let's go back to talking about that week and a half or so that we spent out there. Derek, what were some of your highlights, would you say? And we're still making some of the videos from that trip. We're doing some of like the full day videos. So that's been fun to like go back and see everything we did. Some of those days were super long with all the things that we did and all the places we went. I'm like, was that really the same day that we did X and also did Y? So what were some of the things that you remembered most about that trip?
So I think I remember the first day we were driving kind of up into the higher elevation areas and the views, like immediately you're getting these awesome mountain views. So that was incredible right away. And then we were looking at the sequoias, which was like a bucket list item to see those massive trees. Mm-hmm. So that was breathtaking. Doing the Monterey Bay trip where we went to the coast, we saw a red-footed booby, which was a lifer for Rachel too. So that was cool to see you get a lifer on the trip.
That was
we
an
were
easy
getting
one
all these lifers
because it just sat on the same boat all the time.
Yeah, but when we showed up, it wasn't there. And so like we looked, we're like, oh, it's not here. And then like we checked 5 minutes later and then it had just appeared on the boat basically. That was cool. Point Lobos, there was beautiful. Doing the Clark's Nutcracker, we hiked this super snowy area and we got some flyover views and calls. That was definitely something to work for.
That was
really
epic.
Really all the days were super memorable, and it is cool to go back and look at the videos and remember kind of the specific things we saw there and all that.
Yeah. Rachel, what got you the most pumped up that trip? Because there were a lot of times you were really excited.
Oh my God. So I think obviously at this point, kind of anyone who's, you know, birded with me or watched the videos, especially like the one with the bell sparrow and yellow-billed magpie, knows that I'm a bit of an excitable person, you know, especially when it comes to birds. So there were a lot of moments that really stood out to me. I think the Lawrence's goldfinch, the first day you guys saw them, because we had stopped at this one park and ride area, and we're kind of still in the foothills about to climb up higher. And I heard two of them calling there. They've got these really distinctive call notes that I can't even begin to imitate because I just sound, stupid. But I heard them and I pointed them out. I'm like, oh, there's some Lawrence's goldfinches calling. And I think that you guys saw them, but there was just these two little birds flitting away. So it was the least satisfying way that you could have seen them. And you guys were like, well, you know, we're not going to count them because we didn't really see them. And you know, I felt like, you know, personally responsible for showing you Lawrence's goldfinches. You know, like, I'm the guide. I have to make this happen. But with
you
a species
have
like
the
that.
Lawrence's tattoo.
Yeah, you have a
as
Lawrence's
well.
goldfinch tattoo.
I do.
So.
Should I show?
Yeah,
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 yeah. Go ahead.
Bam, Lawrence's
is.
Goldfinch.
Woo, yes. This is actually based off a photo that I took in March of 2020 as things were just kind of falling apart here in the U.S. It was funny too. I took the photo at this place called Avocado Lake, which it's pretty, but it's one of those places you don't want to go alone.
Oh.
And you don't want to go there after dark. So if someone would have told me like 5, 6 years ago, oh yeah, you're someday going to have a tattoo of something that you took a photo of, an Avocado Lake, I would have been like, yeah, I'm not going to happen.
You're like, is
but
that going to be
there
evidence?
There we go. So, so that was fun. But yeah, so I was really like stressed out and kind of disappointed because Lawrence's goldfinch is one of those species that they're a little unpredictable in their movements. Someone once told me like they kind of have to come to you rather than you going to them, and it's really true. They're very, very nomadic. And so I was thinking, oh my gosh, maybe, you know, what if this is our, you know, this is our only chance, you know, to see Lawrence's goldfinches, you know, that this I'm going to be so disappointed if I can't show them that one. And then we went to the Shaver Lake area. And I remember we were walking down the path toward the lake and I heard one singing. And I remember turning around, mouth completely agape, like, there they are. And then we caught sight of them. I think there were like maybe four or five individuals in that area, but we got to see some of them actually nest building, and you guys got some footage of that. So not only did you get to see them, you got to watch them nest build, and you got footage of that. So that was just that for me, that felt awesome. I hope it felt awesome for you guys too.
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
that was so
it
cool.
was funny too, because at first, it was like, oh, we got eyes on them. And then it was like, oh, they've just left. I hope they come back. And then we're like, okay, they came back. And we're like, why do they keep coming back to the same tree? And then we're like, oh, that makes sense now.
I do remember because we went down there and I didn't bring my tripod the first time. And then I was like, I gotta go
Yeah.
back and get it. They're literally like nest building in the tree. And the just the their calls are so cool. Like it's just like a weird, interesting, so notable kind of thing. Yeah, that was definitely a cool experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember too, you got really excited about the summer tanager that you found.
Oh,
That
that was
was out
cool.
of season at Point Lobos, and we tracked
Yeah.
that bad boy down through the forest and eventually found it.
Oh yeah, that was fun too. I remember hearing that, and again, I can't imitate the call, but that rising Pitucky Tuck, or I don't know
Yeah.
how
I
exactly
mean,
people
that's
phrase it,
like what
but
it sounds like.
yeah,
Pretty
it's
weird.
so distinctive. I heard that, and you know, just for that location, it was just not on my radar. So yeah, that was a little surprising, but I'm glad that he showed himself. That was really cool. And didn't the eBird reviewer reach out to you about that, asking like
Yeah,
for more
they were
evidence?
like, they wanted more info, and I'm like, because I think it was like a mobile checklist. So when we were back, I'm like, here's point blank pictures, here's audio, here's the
Yeah.
GPS location.
We
So,
do
yeah,
you think it
definitely
was one of
see
those
that.
situations where they wanted to go back and get it?
Maybe
Like, hey,
he probably
tell
wanted to go.
me more about that summer tanager. Some other people might want to
I
see
don't know if
it.
anyone saw it after us, though. It may have been a one day wonder kind of deal.
No.
But it was cool. Yeah, that was one where your ear picked it out right away. And I remember also we were quizzing you in the car because you were doing the trip back to the Midwest. So we were quizzing
Oh
you on
yeah, I
different
remember.
calls. It was really hard to stump you too. There were
Yeah.
like we had to play like really random things from wild locations
The
to get
only
you to be like,
time
I don't know.
that I stumped her was when I accidentally said the wrong name of the bird. Like, I think it was a California towhee I was playing, and I was like, it's a canyon towhee. And she's like, really? That doesn't seem right. And I was like, oh, you're right. It wasn't right.
You did stun me with a few of them, though. You know, some of those Eastern warblers, you know, they're like some of their songs can sound incredibly similar to one another, and it's, you know, it's so nuanced. There's so much variability, you know, out there in the field. And it's, you know, I haven't lived out there in the Midwest, and granted, I do want to let people know that I'm born and raised here, you know, in California, just lived out in the Midwest for about 7 years. But you know, if you're not there all the time, I feel like it's almost sort of a use it or lose it type of thing. You know, there's so many different vocalizations they have, and especially with the warblers, you know, there's such a, you know, tremendous variety of them out there in the East compared to out here. I mean, it's a lot to keep track of. I think I got mixed up with like I think hooded warbler and magnolia warbler. I think I did get a little tripped up on those. And but the one that stumped me the most was when you played the fulvous whistling duck call.
Oh,
I
I like how you remember
don't know.
specifically.
I remember weird and random things, but like not really important things. You can ask my husband if you don't believe that's true. But yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was fun. I remember getting really excited when we went to go find the yellow-billed magpies. And I was so stressed because we went to that first location. I thought for sure we'd get them there, or at least, you know, some better views en route, because we'd seen them, but not in a place where we could stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was hoping, like, okay, please let us see them somewhere not on private property so we can stop. You guys can get some video. And then that didn't happen. We go to the first spot, no sign of them there. I'm like, oh, crap. Well, I was going to take us to a whole different area. But then as we're driving down the road, I saw a sign for this one park. I'm like, wait, I saw an eBird that they were seen here just this morning. So, and yeah, then we made a little detour. And first thing when we get out of the car, I hear them calling those really distinctive, almost kind of taunting calls. And I start literally running over in that direction, which is probably the worst thing that I could have done in retrospect. But,
They
you know,
didn't mind.
it
They
all
were,
worked
yeah,
out
they didn't seem
fine.
fine that much. I do remember we were like driving down that road and be like, is that a yellow-billed magpie? And you're like, yeah, it is. And be like, can we stop? And you'd be like, I don't think we should stop for that one. And then we'd be like, there's another one. Should we stop for that? You're like, I don't think we can stop for that one. Yeah, I think that was like some of the most stressed out you were the whole trip.
Oh, definitely. But I had good reason for not wanting to stop. You get on some of those really rural areas with farmlands, it's all private property. You don't know who you're messing with. So
They think they're
no,
gonna steal their grapefruits.
you gotta be careful.
Just not gonna do that.
So I got to do, well, we've guided here and I got to do some guiding in Texas, but you do feel a real responsibility for trying to get people birds they really want, and you kind of just like, you might go to a place 99 times and see it. And then the time you go with them, it might not be there. And it just happened. You're like, I promise they're normally here. Like, it seems like a sure thing, but you definitely feel that
Yeah.
kind of like responsibility. How do you feel like you manage that with your clients when you go out?
For the most part, people have, at least with me, people have been very understanding. But I feel like that's probably a better question for someone that's been guiding for several years and, in all these different locations all around the world, because I'm sure they've dealt with a lot more personalities than I have, just guiding, right here in California and, a handful of other places, across the US. Yeah, for the most part, people are pretty understanding. Wildlife, you can't control what they do, even if something is really reliable in a particular spot. There's never any guarantees. And yeah, people, in my experience at least, people have been, thus far anyway, have been very understanding. And that is one thing that I try and make clear, at the outset, we have a really good chance, but nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So generally, people understand that.
Yeah. One of my friends who guides in really tropical places, it sounded tough because he's, really into birds and birding. And he had a photography client who he would show him like a really cool rare bird. And he like wouldn't care because he wanted to photograph like macaws and things. Like there were very
Oh,
specific things he wanted to see. So he'd be like, oh, look at this. Like it's rare anyone gets like a view of this. And he'd be like, can we look at some parrots or something?
it's funny. I found that clients' targets and, their desires really run the gamut. It's because I've had clients who will not, like, they all they want to do is photograph stuff, and they won't count anything on their list unless they photograph it. And then for me, the pressure's really on. Then I feel like, okay, I've got to work really hard, to take them to all these places and get them to see, to actually see all these species. And then I've had clients on the complete opposite end of the spectrum who, like they're literally just looking to build up their list. In fact, this is one woman I guided nearly 2 years ago who was, I think she was, oh, in her late 70s, maybe early 80s, and she wanted to be part of the 700 Club. So she was visiting out here from New York to try to get up to 700 species. So she was just looking to bulk up her list. And what she did, I kind of had to, to chuckle when I think about it. If I so much as said, oh, I hear a McGillivray's warbler calling down there. It's not singing, but I hear its little smack call. Or I heard some Lawrence's goldfinches over there calling or singing or whatever. And but we didn't get any visual on it, it would go on her list. All I had to do was say that the bird was present and it would go on her list. And that took a lot of pressure. I mean, granted, I still tried to show her things, but that took a lot of pressure off for sure. And then of course there's people, and I haven't experienced a ton of this yet, but maybe just because of, where I'm located and where I mostly guide, people that are really wanting to see those really rare things. Typically out here, the range-restricted birds, like almost like wrentits, white-headed woodpeckers, Clark's nutcrackers, things like that. Typically, they're pretty reliable, so I haven't had a lot of issues with that. But as you guys know, Clark's nutcrackers in particular aren't always super reliable. We had to work pretty hard for that,
We
but
had
it
to
was
work
worth it though.
extremely hard for that. We had to like
Yes.
get up early in the morning, go through cold temperatures, walk over th and through streams of frozen snow and ice.
Yeah, and in that spot, there was like nobody there. And remember, there was that car parked outside the gate, and we were there like as early as you
Yes.
could be. That was creepy.
I
Like
just knew that we're gonna see that on a true crime
we were a
podcast. So
little
they
freaked.
were.
Like we looked in it just to make sure like there was nobody in there. But it was a little freaky walking up to it, just being like, hopefully there's nothing sketchy going on here.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it was, if I remember right, I think it was actually just inside the gate,
It was.
which was kind of added an extra layer of weird to it. But I was really hoping that we wouldn't find a dead body, but I was glad that you guys were with me, in case we did, so that I wouldn't be alone for that experience. But yeah, it's weird, and in some of those, remote forest service areas, I mean, you really don't know what you're gonna find, who or what you're gonna encounter. I mean, it can get pretty interesting at times.
I think this, oh,
To
go
say the
ahead.
least. I was just gonna say, like, being up there, we were the only people on that, walking that area. Nice cat appearance.
Photobomb there.
Yeah. We were really the only people up there, and it was just so quiet. And it did have a little element of eeriness to it, almost like you wondered if something or someone was watching you.
I'm glad you said something or someone, because this is a perfect time to address the furry elephant in the room. We went to Shaver Lake,
The
of course, not the
cat.
cat, which is famous for Sasquatch sightings. And we always ask everybody this, and we talked about it while we were there with you, so we know, unless you've had an experience since then, but have you ever encountered anything interesting or weird in the woods when you're out birding?
So,
I
as
like the
far
sound
as
of that.
potential Sasquatch activity goes, I've never seen one, but I do have some fun anecdotes from other people to share, and one thing that my husband and I saw. So a few years back, my husband and I were birding, well, hiking, not so much birding, but someplace that was Nelder Grove, I think, was the area that we were in, not too far from the Shaver Lake area, just a little north of there. And we were out walking along this trail, and we saw this tree that had essentially been uprooted. And it was, I mean, oh gosh, if I had to guess a weight on the tree, I wouldn't know what to guess really, but pretty substantially sized, not something that someone, even a big, burly, strong man could just easily lift and plunge into the ground, hard enough for it to actually stay in place. Well, so this tree had been uprooted, and something or someone had taken it and managed to plunge the top side of the tree into the ground. And we were looking around. There was no signs of any heavy equipment having been in the area, nothing like that, nothing that would provide any sort of logical explanation for it. So we were really puzzled by that. So that was really weird, but maybe that was just us, and our overactive imaginations. I don't really know, but it was very peculiar. Maybe I'll send you a picture of that, and you'll see what I mean. So the anecdote that I heard, this is actually from the venue where my husband and I got married nearly 6 years ago. The guy running the place at the time told me, and granted, this was in the Sierras also, not too, this is near Ochre, so a little north of Shaver Lake. The guy running the place actually, and I'm not going to say the name of the venue because I don't want to give too much away, even though it has changed ownership, but he told my husband first, and then my husband told me, and I went and asked the guy that he actually had seen them on the property on a handful of occasions. And he actually showed me some blurry pictures from his phone. And one of them, this large furry creature, was a blur more than anything, but you could still make out that it was large and furry, was running away from the camera. And in one of the images that he showed my husband, this large furry creature was rummaging through a trash can.
Wow.
So yeah, that's but I think that's about the extent of my personal Sasquatch experience or stories that I can impart. Yeah, it's a little eerie.
It's surprisingly a big part of kind of the culture in the area, because at places we would stop in Shaver Lake, they had, things you could put on your car, stickers. There was like the Sasquatch mural we stopped at. So
Oh
it
yeah.
definitely is, a cult, like around here. Even though some people do have Sasquatch sightings, there's really not any like Sasquatch themed murals or anything to that degree.
Yeah, it's a big enough thing out there that the show Finding Bigfoot actually did an episode out there Oh, probably, I don't know exactly when, but a little over a decade ago. And if I remember right, I was telling you guys about that. And then like a day or two after you left California, you guys went and watched that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember Ryan telling me that.
Yeah, I got the Discovery Plus subscription just specifically to watch that episode. And then I went down the rabbit hole of watching other Finding Bigfoot episodes. So yeah, that it was cool to be in that environment where there is, you know, some fanfare around that, I would say. But the Shaver Lake area, we had a lot of success there birding too, because we got the Lawrence's goldfinches there. We got what else did we get there? We had
MacGillivray's warblers were there. Yeah. The views of the lake were gorgeous. We also had a hermit warbler.
That was like some of the best views we got of hermit warblers in that area. Yeah, that was
really
a good
pretty
day.
One thing that surprised Ryan and I, and this kind of goes on the topic of you're reading a book and you see things about a bird, but it might be different when you actually see it. How shocked we were how big and beefy the wren tit was.
Oh yeah.
We were reading about it and I thought it'd be like bush tit size. And then like we're looking and you could hear it calling. Then it popped out and it was just this like massive bird. And we're like, wow, I did not expect it to look like that.
Oh yeah. They are surprisingly big. A lot of that is tail though. Although I will admit they do have a noticeably larger body than, you know, a bush tit does, but they're largely tailed, but yeah, they are surprised. I remember the first time I saw one too, kind of being struck by that same thing. You know, you expect this, you know, a little pint sized bird, but they're definitely bigger than one would expect. But
yeah.
They're so much fun though. I love wren tits. I never get tired of hearing them. They've got those really, really distinctive song. So of course, both the male and the female will sing all year round. Definitely a little more in the breeding season though. Their songs are, you can tell them apart, the sexes apart by song, which is really cool. But they also have these, and I don't think that you guys got to hear this when you were out here, but they've got these really neat grating calls that they utter too. And it has almost kind of a ruby crowned kinglet-ish quality, maybe a little longer, a little harsher, and a little, yeah, just a little more drawn out, but it's really cool. I think you guys should listen to that too.
Cool. We'll have to check that out. Was there another bird that you saw for the first time that was different than you thought it would be?
Oh gosh.
Like maybe either it was like tiny, you thought it'd be bigger, you know, the reverse or colors popped more. Behavior was different. One thing for us was hook-billed kites. They act very parrot-like,
that
which
was
weird because I was thinking they'd act more like other, you know, hawks and things.
I have a bird that was from that trip actually that I was way more excited to see than I thought it would be. Do you know what it is? I talked about it like a ton after we saw it, and it wasn't even like at the top of our list.
I don't know.
The Nuttall's woodpecker.
The Nuttall's.
I thought the Nuttall's woodpecker.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I don't even know why. I still can't explain it. I was just like very taken in by the
Nuttall's
woodpecker.
That was cool. Yeah, very cool.
That's one that I, even though, you know, you go out into these oak, you know, woodland habitats around here, you know, and they are fairly common. I never get tired of hearing them though. I love their calls and their drums. I mean, they're amazing. I love Nuttall's woodpeckers. And I still have that drawing you made me, Ryan, of a of a Nuttall's. I have it on my dresser.
Oh, very nice.
That's
I'm glad
so
that
cool.
You still
I love
have
it.
It was on the boarding pass, if I remember right. I was like, I've got
it
some time.
Was.
I've got
yes.
a drawing
yes,
something.
Here. Nice. Yeah, that was really, that was a nice little parting gift. I really appreciate that. I'm going to frame that someday.
I hope you do. I'd like to see it next
Put it
time,
on my
you know,
desk.
On the back somewhere. Your cat's like walking right past it. It'd be perfect. You know what other bird we didn't even mention, although super cool, is the mountain quails we saw.
Oh, yeah.
Those
definitely.
Were some of the coolest birds. I think they just were in the back of my mind because that was like the first day. Like the first day was wild and it concluded with mountain quail sightings.
Yeah, and that, well, I think that's a video that we finished, but we haven't released yet. But soon,
oh, yes.
Soon that one will be out. And the mountain quail call, we would hear it so often, but, you know, we never got a glimpse of one until we were deep kind of in the woods. And then we had a cool second encounter. But that's probably one of my favorite calls we heard on the trip was the mountain quail.
Yeah.
What's amazing is that loud fork call they make is actually their song.
Oh.
So I know it's not much of a song, but nonetheless, that is our song. So you hear that during the breeding season. And so the rest of the year, and then they'll make these calls also during the breeding season, but they've got these, and I don't even know how to describe them, these really sort of kind of jumbled buzzy series. Again, it's I can recognize it, but I can't describe it to save my life. But they do have these really, really unique calls. I heard some on my first of the year birding excursion. I at first there's a part of it that's almost kind of reminiscent of a sapsucker call, and not the mew, but kind of more of a kind of a buzzing sort of sound. It kind of puts me in, kind of put me in mind a little bit of a red-breasted sapsucker, like almost a little bit. But it was mountain quails, like two or three mountain quail. They were calling in some bushes close to where I was. I caught a fleeting glimpse as they flew from like one side of the road to the other. But yeah, that's one of those species. I was really glad when you guys actually got a look at them, and I have to credit Rick for that. That was Rick, definitely not me. But that was so cool because we'd been hearing them all day and we had no luck in actually catching sight of one. So it was amazing you guys were actually able to see one, you know, sitting on a perch and, you know, uttering its song. I mean, that was just amazing.
Yeah,
so cool.
That was definitely worth the trip. Rick's our friend from Fresno Audubon.
He was on the ball that day.
Yeah, he was like, he was dialed in.
Yeah, he was spotting all sorts of stuff that day. That does remind me, though, there are a few species that we still need to come back for either some better looks or to get our lifer. And I know
the Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, that's on the list for sure. One's tricolored blackbird, because those were super frustrating because we saw them flying. We saw the males flying past and they just would not sit anywhere. So, of course, for us, we always want videos of things because we make, you know, the videos. So we're probably the most difficult of all the people in terms of the views that we're looking for guiding. And then the northern pygmy owl is another one. And then probably sooty grouse, which is super tough.
But... You know, Pacific wren, we've gotten in when we were in Oregon, we got a quick view. But that's one that's been surprisingly elusive.
Well, I will say, if and when you guys do come back, I will go out of my way to get you some good looks at a Pacific wren, especially if it's during the breeding season. That shouldn't be a problem. And I feel kind of dumb saying that because it was the breeding season when you guys were here last time. And I thought for sure, oh, we'll get Pacific wrens because we'll be in some really good habitat for them. And I think I kind of just didn't go out of my way for it because I just took for granted that they would be around. And of course, that didn't happen. But that's one I'd go out of my way for. Sooty grouse. That one can be tough. So I'd have to take some deep dives into eBird beforehand. Or you could just luck out and get attacked by one like I did one time.
I'm going to need you to elaborate on that story for the viewers.
Because that's the experience we want.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. That. Oh, yeah. So this was like, oh, 5, 6 years ago. I was with some friends. We were up in Kings Canyon National Park. And we were near Kings Canyon and we're driving along Highway 180. And one of my friends goes, there was a chicken on the side of the road. Why is there a chicken here? And instantly I'm like, okay, that's going to be a grouse. You know, that's not somebody's, you know, it's not some domestic chicken out there running around. At least I hope it's not. So I, you know, wanted to get a better look. So I turned the car around and we, you know, parked in this turnoff on the side of the road, right across from where this highly territorial male sooty grouse was. And what does he go and do? You know, I'm anticipating, okay, yeah, I'll just get a few looks at him from across the road, then I'll drive on. No, that's not what happened. He comes running across the road and starts attacking me. I mean, it was a standoff between me and this sooty grouse that lasted a good 5 minutes. You know, he basically had me backed into a corner. So I'm trying to back away from him. He keeps, you know, fluttering his wings and flying toward me and attacking my leg. I'm trying to get back to my car. He's not letting me. And this couple came by in a convertible. They stopped, pointed at me and laughed and then drove off.
That's tough. Yeah.
And I managed to get a 47-second video of the last part of the encounter, which includes me scolding the grouse. I was scolding the grouse, you know, like it's a small child, like, you need to stop right now.
It's not okay to bully.
And ultimately, I kind of saw my out, and then I go, you know what? Screw you. I go running into my car, jump in. And I'm like, oh, okay, we got to get out of here. So I managed to, you know, turn the car on and, you know, turn around and drive away. And I kid you not, this grouse chased us for like, probably 5 to 10 seconds before giving up. So you know, my bet is that it was just, you know, a male being territorial and making sure, you know, keeping all intruders out of his territory, because this was like late April, early May. So, you know, that's what makes the most sense. But yeah, that was an experience.
His testosterone's got to be through the roof. I mean, he had just chased off a massive mammal. You know, he's got to be feeling pretty confident. Probably found like 10 mates.
Like
after
any
that.
Of the females watching, like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I was totally wrong about this guy.
I didn't know Brent had that in him.
Yeah. So that was fun. You know, and that's one of those species that they can be, at least in my experience, they can be a little tricky. I would have taken you to some areas where I feel like we would have had a better chance at seeing them had those areas been accessible. I know I heard one when we were up on Kaiser Pass, but yeah, it wasn't going to show itself. So,
yeah,
but I will make that happen next time.
Yeah. And those species are tough where it's kind of like what you talked about with the Lawrences, where there's species that are nomadic, you almost have to let them come to you, but also those other ones where you're just kind of likely to stumble upon them if you're in the woods enough. And I feel like those are really hard species for tours because, like, we might run into one, we might not, kind of just as luck. And it's surprising to me because for us, the nomadics are a lot of winter finches, so like your crossbills, stuff like that. But then out in kind of the Pacific Northwest, upper California area, it's like pinyon jay is very nomadic. And then you have like Lawrence's goldfinch, like things that aren't necessarily your typical like winter finch type species.
I feel like grouse are just tough though, because like for us, that's kind of like the ruffed and spruce grouse pretty much. Like you just have to kind of luck out on them while you're driving around the roads. And I've only ever seen one spruce grouse. So
there were two in the group. Two.
Well,
individuals.
Yeah, that's true.
One
I've
encounter.
Had one encounter with two spruce grouse. So there you have it, I guess.
Yeah, I lucked out a few months back, and I think I texted you guys after this happened. I was so excited. I was in the Eastern Sierra driving along a Forest Service road, and in the habitat out there, it's so vastly different, you know, at least in certain areas, you know, from the Western Slope. I mean, it's just, it's very, very dry, just very dry, and not a lot of those, you know, big, you know, tall evergreens that you see across so much of the Western Slope. So it's a whole, you know, a whole new suite of species. I mean, it's pretty amazing. But we're driving down this road, and these three greater sage grouse just come walking out in front of us, you know, from one side of the road to the other. And oh, that was just so cool. But I know I'd have to look into this deeper to find out exactly where it is. I've heard about it, and I just haven't gone to it myself, but there's a lek out there. And it's just a really reliable spot. So if ever you guys do come out, and I believe it's in mid-April, I'll have to look into that just to be sure. But if ever you guys come out at that time, I'll take you guys to that spot.
Sounds pretty
awesome.
Get you
some greater sage grouse. So
that's hard to pass up.
Definitely.
That's hard to pass up.
I know a spot. Got a deal. For birders, it's different, you know. But cool. Did you have a species you thought of that was a little different when you saw it for the first time? Anything come to mind? Of like a lifer that, you know, was different than what you thought it would be.
Oh, you know,
obviously that's sooty grouse.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. Oh gosh, as far as appearance goes, I think, you know, that's a tough one. I'm gonna have to say painted redstart from Southeast Arizona, and it didn't. The difference wasn't necessarily in terms of appearance. It was more so its behavior. You know, I wasn't expecting it to be so, I guess, cooperative. Mm. You know, most warblers are just, you know, there and gone in a flash. And these guys, you know, they were just right out there foraging for insects, coming right back down to the same spot. I mean, just so amazingly cooperative. And that's just not what I'm accustomed to with warblers in general. So I guess that was a little surprising. But as far as, you know, anything that looked, you know, substantially different from what I was expecting, I don't know. I think maybe the first time that I saw, and this is going way back to when I first started birding, when I was, you know, literally 9 years old, I think seeing a spotted towhee for the first time. But of course, they weren't spotted towhees, they were rufous-sided towhees, you know, so the spotted and the eastern were lumped together. But seeing one of those, and I guess just seeing how superficially robin-like its profile was, you know, since it's got that dark back and those, you know, kind of rufous sides. So it did bear some superficial similarities to a robin, and I guess that kind of surprised me. But anything in recent years, I can't really think of anything that really surprised me in terms of appearance.
I
Not
found another
really.
one. What you got?
The Huttons Vireo. That thing was chunkier and slower moving than I expected it to be.
Ouch, but okay.
Hey, call them as you see them.
That is
They
not
were
a compliment,
cute.
though.
They were adorable. Very cute
Yes.
birds.
Oh, and I love that you guys got to see a fledgling.
Yeah,
that was so cool. Oh, so cool. Yeah, I love hearing Hutton's vireos too. That's one that always excites me. Always. I mean, they've got such, as far as vireos go, at least, vireos here in the US, I mean, they've got such a distinctive repertoire. I mean, it's so much fun to listen to. And I love how repetitive they are. So much fun. Especially like when I hear them in the Sierras, I get more excited because although they are there, they're tougher to find in the Sierras than they are in those, coastal forests. I remember we basically had just stepped foot into, the forest there at Point Lobos. And I think we heard one within like what, 5-10 minutes? I don't remember how long it
Yeah,
was, but
that was
they're
pretty
so
quick.
much more reliable there than they are, in like, comparable habitats in the Sierra. So I get like extra excited hearing them there. So, but I'm excitable. So can I say?
Yeah. So we always try to ask, do you have any advice for new birders or people just starting out?
Oh gosh, there's a lot. I feel like there's so many nuggets of wisdom I could pass along. And I think of like what I would say to my younger self. I think more than anything, it's easy to get overwhelmed, especially, when dealing with groups of birds like sparrows, for example, because so there's so many of them and some of them can look, superficially at least, quite similar to one another. There's a lot of people that I just feel very daunted by that, like, how am I going to learn the differences between all these different sparrow species? But what I'd say to people, facing that challenge is, and this is what I did for myself, is start off with the easy ones and work your way up. Here in, Central California, where I grew up in the wintertime, fall and winter and, late spring, early spring rather, we were just inundated with gambles, white-crowned sparrows. I mean, they're just everywhere here on the valley floor and in the foothills. So I started out with them. They're super easy to identify. And then, they've, of course, some very distinctive markings. And you just kind of work your way up from there. Go move to maybe the golden-crowned sparrow, but white-throated sparrows, which aren't exactly common around here. But just, start off with the easy ones and work your way up slowly. And I'd say the same thing with shorebirds. Start off with the easy ones, American avocet, blackneck, stilt, things like that. And just work your way up slowly, one species at a time. And, it's okay to make mistakes. I consider myself a, decently experienced birder, but even so, I make mistakes. And I could hear Ryan over there going, Pacific loon.
Happens to the best of us.
And it doesn't matter who you are, even if you've been at that birder for 100 years, mistakes are going to happen. And they're okay, own up to them and learn from them and move on from that. So I think those are the two biggest pieces of advice that I'd like to, that I would pass along to newer birders.
Yeah, I think that's great. Pacific loon was a bird we saw in Monterey Bay we thought was out there, and then we got better looks, turned out to be common. But birding, definitely when I was at like the Rio Grande Festival, I got to bird with a bunch of different people. And really all different levels, it's so easy to see something and clicks in your brain or something and you yell it out. And then you're like, wait, 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 it's such and such. Like it happens so often to like all different levels of birders too. Like it's really just part of it. And I feel like beginners, they do that. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like I didn't mean to like, say the wrong thing. But it really does happen at any stage and to like all different levels. So don't
Stuff
feel
cool
bad about it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I kind of, that was very humbling for me when that happened, I'll admit, because I felt like up to that point, I'd done a fairly decent job, at identifying things. And yeah, that to me, that was a pretty serious flub. So I'll have to make
you did
up
a
for
great
that.
job. Don't worry.
We just got
I owe you guys a Pacific
lifebird. It was an emotional high. We understand. There was a lot going on.
So from our experience, we can tell people, if they take a tour with you, you're going to be super attentive, have a really great itinerary plan and know your calls, know your species very well. If people go out, but what else can people expect if they go out and do a tour with you?
Well, one thing that I like to do is, thus far anyway, I've just been leading private tours. So I let the people come to me and there's a series of questions that I ask them. Number one is, you know, how much time do you have? What are your target species? And also I find a, you know, just a really delicate way to ask, you know, do you, you know, how mobile they are, you know, do you, would you rather do a lot more hiking or more birding by car? You know, how do you want to do this? So I take all those, you know, factors into account, and then I tailor the itinerary to their specific needs. So the itinerary will be personalized to your needs. It'll be based on what you want to see, how long you're able to hike, and, you know, just how much time you have in general. So it will be personalized and very enjoyable. As Ryan and Derek can attest, I definitely am a little bit on the enthusiastic side of things. So it will not be boring for sure. But yeah, it will be an enthralling experience the whole way around.
Yeah, definitely. If people are in the area, we would highly recommend Rachel. They can find you, is it centralcaliforniabirdingtours.com?
That's correct. But also my Instagram is a good place to find me. Tanager underscore girl. And I know, yes, I should probably, if I want to be more accurate, change it to Tanager underscore lady. You know, I'm rocking the gray hair over here. But yeah, that's where you can find me if you want to kind of see what I do, what I'm all about. My Instagram is, it's all my content is birding related. So yeah, if you want to see kind of what I do and get a little more familiarity of the things I can show you and the places I go, that's a great place to look for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And then after we got done, I did send you one of the shirts I made. Do you mind showing people? I like that you rep it. Yeah, it's got all the,
well, of course,
the Sierra birds over there.
Yeah, and you guys got all of these while you were here. Let's see. Okay, let me see if I'm correct here. So female Lawrence's goldfinch, that was a lifer for you.
Yep.
California quail, that was also a lifer, right?
Yep.
As well as a Stellar's Jay, it's, I think it's right there.
Yep.
And then the Western Tanager, that was not a lifer though, right?
But we saw tons of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
I feel like the Stellar's Jay is a funny one as well, because I remember you were like, we will get those at the Grant Grove Village area. And then we didn't get them at Grant Grove Village. And then we saw them at like several other places. But I remember that was one that Derek wanted to see a lot.
Yeah, they were kind of elusive. But, you know, being back here, whenever I try to get good shots of blue jays, they can also be kind of elusive. Yeah. So it's, I feel like it's kind of a jay thing.
Yeah. Well, I remember too, like, I think it's probably because, like, I've seen them so much, I kind of take them for granted. I'm just like, oh, yeah, they're everywhere. No big deal. And I remember, like, the first interview you guys did with me on camera for the videos. I was so, so excited because we hadn't even gotten to our first like really productive stop yet. It was day one and we were en route to the Grant Grove area. I think we were heading to our first stop, which I think was like the Big Stump picnic area. We were a few minutes away from that. And Ryan, I think it was you. You were like, so Rachel, what do you think the lifer we're going to get is? And I was like, oh, it's going to be a Stellar's Jay. And I was so confident of that. And didn't happen that way. I think, actually, speaking of that, do you guys remember what the first lifer was?
I just watched the clip you're talking about the other day, because I was working on a video about that entire day of birding, and technically it was the California quail. Well, actually no, it was the California scrub jay at the airport. Yeah, it was just hanging out in the first one we got with you was the California quail, because it made that Chicago song that it does. And then the first one after that we got eyes on was either the McGillivray's warbler or the green-tailed towhee.
I think it was the, probably the green-tailed towhee. But then I remembered we also had, I don't know,
Dusky
people,
flycatcher.
Well, yeah, but people say it differently, Lazuli or Lazuli. I don't know which one you say, but bunting we had up there too, which was a lifer.
She says Lazuli bunting, but our friends in Arizona say Lazuli bunting.
So that's maybe a plover-plover situation.
We don't claim to know either. We're not the authority on how to say that word, so I don't know.
I'm super excited.
Oh yeah, no, we're both like getting super excited about this right now.
But there was also
now you're getting involved in it. What are you doing?
Well, it's thick-billed fox sparrow, which felt different than our regular.
Sounded
really cool.
I was gonna say the Big Sun picnic area was like an explosion of life birds, because it crazy. And then that one other area across from Grant, the picnic area across from Grant Grove Village.
Oh yeah, I remember. I think Rick pointed out the red-breasted sapsucker, and I think you guys first got eyes on a hermit warbler there.
Yeah, Pacific purple finch,
white-headed woodpecker. Yeah.
It is tough when you're in a new place because you don't know what to focus on because there's all these new birds showing up in your view at once, and you don't know which one might be the only time you see that species. So it's really tough, especially when you're trying to get media to be like, what do I focus on?
Yeah.
And then later in the trip, you go back and be like, man, I'm glad I got that shot because that was the only one of that particular species. Or you're like, why did I spend 20 minutes getting video of this one bird that I saw at every other place we went to?
Oh yeah, I will. That's one of those memories. Like I'm a bit of a sentimental person, and that's kind of one of those memories I hold on to. Was literally getting out of the car at Big Stump, our first real stop of the day, and just immediately like, oh, there's dusky flycatcher singing over there. There's blue bunting just called up there. Oh, there's McGillivray's warblers down there, and then hearing some green tailed towhees in there singing. I mean, it was just, it was. I see that. That's, I'm oh gosh, I'm such a nerd. I love, even though I've seen and heard all those species many, many times, it's so exciting to me when I can show them to someone else who's never seen them, because for me it's like getting to experience it for the first time all over again through that person's eyes. And that's exactly what I experienced with you guys. And I look back on that, those moments so fondly. I mean, that was just so memorable to me. I mean, I love that. I've replayed that in my mind so many times over. I mean, I live for that sort of thing. I mean, that's just my absolute favorite thing, is just getting to show people these birds they've never seen before and just watching them experience it and just experiencing it vicariously through them. I mean, I love that so much.
I think you're in the right business then.
Yeah, I just got to figure out how to drum up more business. So I'm working on it.
I have one more question.
Okay.
In your opinion, what was the life bird that you remember us being the most excited about? And what was the one that we were surprisingly the least excited about?
Wow. Okay. Probably the most excited about? I remember you guys were pretty excited over the red-footed booby.
Yeah.
Because that one was just unexpected, too. What else? I remember you guys being pretty excited over the yellow-billed magpies.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But that was almost kind of anticlimactic because of where they were when we first saw them. And I think Ryan, you were, like you said, you even mentioned earlier, you were really excited over the Nuttall's woodpecker. And I guess I was a little surprised by that just because you seem to be more focused on other species, especially because like that particular day we were out searching for yellow-billed magpies in particular. I think you guys probably seemed maybe the least excited about the Lawrence's goldfinches. Maybe that's because I was overly excited about it. I don't know. I mean, there were so many awesome moments, you know, from the time that you guys were here. It was just so cool. And I'm really glad that I, you know, reached out to you guys when I did. And I remember being so, I'd wanted to for a while, but I was so apprehensive about it. And finally, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to do this. And I figured, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Either they tell me no, or they ignore me. And I figured it was one of those two things that would happen, but I'm like, you know, how about I try? Why not? So I was really surprised. I think Ryan, I think you were the first one to respond to me. So yeah, I was a little surprised when you responded, I think on like maybe within 12 hours or so.
Yeah, but I remember reading the email. I was like, hey, Rye, like this person wants to guide us out in California. I was like, that sounds awesome. What do you think? He was like, yeah, it sounds awesome. And we were just kind of like, cool. Like, let's do that.
Great. I don't really see a downside there. So,
yeah. So, go ahead.
I'm saying, were you guys at any point concerned? Like, yes, this person just dangled like a huge carrot in front of our faces. What if this person is a huge weirdo? I mean, was there any apprehension as far as
Well, we did a Zoom meeting together. So we were like,
oh, I remember
well, let's,
that. Well,
you know,
prior to that.
No, not really.
No, I don't think so.
Maybe there should have been more.
I think we were like to the point where you would have had to have been like really, really off-putting for us to be like, we should reconsider this. Like we were already at like 99% before we did a Zoom meeting.
But I feel like the species that you got super excited, well, there were a bunch that you got super excited about, but one that I think we have the best reaction to is the LeConte's thrasher.
That was a good one.
Because there was the Bell's sparrow first, and then you're like, LeConte's thrasher. Like, I feel like that reaction was really
That was over the top.
compilation video. I think the magpie one, because I have her on camera talking, and then all of a sudden your eyes got huge and you started like pointing like this.
There's a lot of point. There's a lot of
There's a
gestures.
lot of gesticulation. Yeah, you might be a little Italian.
Yes, I'm one of those people.
And then I feel like one of the ones, it wasn't a lifer that we saw that we probably weren't as excited about, is the summer tanager, because we get them in other places. So it's like, oh yeah, summer tanager. Like, it's cool that it was rare, but it wasn't like necessarily something that like we had never seen before.
What was the last lifer we got? Do you remember?
The last one.
Oh, I think I know the answer.
It might have been the Clarks.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, I think it was the Clarks.
Yeah.
So
Oh,
I
the
have
Clarks
this.
Nutcracker. I thought about the Clarks Grebe for some reason. I was like, that was like day
Oh,
three.
no. Yeah, that was not.
I remember
Yeah.
too, we were in that Airbnb that was in that place that had the cat outside too, that we named Oreo.
Oh,
So like every day when we'd get up early, this cat would just like come greet us, and it was like the friendliest
keep
cat.
your cats inside, folks.
It
But
was so
it was
funny
a super nice
though.
cat.
Yeah, so like every day Oreo that we named, if that, I don't think that was its real name, it would come and like say hi to us, and that was like a tradition daily. It was before we go out birding, we have to pet the cat and then say goodbye to it.
Yeah, and the owners did come out. They had like a bunch of cats, but they were like, "Oh, we see you found the neighborhood cat or whatever."
Well, Ryan, I remember you talking smack about cats. I remember you saying that you didn't understand, like,
I'm not a big cat
you just
person.
were not a cat person.
I'm not a big cat person.
And
I think it's funny when people are like, yeah, you're gonna love my cat because it acts like a dog. And I'm like, why don't you just get a dog then if you want something that does that? That's like, I say this all the time. People are like, yeah, I love the fish that I just ate because it didn't taste fishy at all. And I'm like, just have some chicken. It solves your problem.
exactly.
But I did
So
like
I have,
Oreo.
yeah, he was so sweet. I miss that cat. So I do have a question for you guys, if you don't mind me posing one of the
Yeah, go
questions.
ahead.
And this is completely off base. Just feel free to completely take it out. But like county records, have you guys ever found anything that's either like a record for your county or something that's just like extremely rare for the area that you live in? Like you were the one to find it and you get to be the one to, sound the alarm, so to speak. If so, what was it?
I've got one.
Go ahead.
So I don't know if it was the first or the second county record, but we had a Townsend solitaire in one of, in the home county that we live in. Were you with me that day?
No.
Okay, it was me and a bunch of my friends, and we were on like a little,
It wasn't a Christmas bird
it
count,
wasn't a
but
Christmas
okay.
bird count. One of the like best birders in the county was kind of taking us around, and we were in a car behind her and some other people, and we saw something thrushy that was in like this kind of weird area. It was like a marsh in the middle of like, I think March, like mid-March. And we were like, what is that? That looks kind of like a bluebird. And then we pulled over and got a better look at it. It was a Townsend solitaire, which it was in a weird habitat for Townsend solitaire, but we got some documentation of it. And it was either the first or the second record of it. And I
Oh,
know at
nice.
least a rare bird you found. I don't, it was
Well,
not a first county
so
record, but
first was the you guys had a golden eagle in the same county, was that?
we did. That wasn't like a first record, I
Okay.
don't think.
Yeah, not necessarily like for a county, but I found a northern mockingbird up here when I was looking for a yellow-breasted chat, which is,
Oh,
out of
nice.
range, so that was cool to, report. And then in the Rio Grande Valley, we did a big day trip and our group found Townsend's warbler, which was cool. I actually got
Nice.
visuals. So we got it to report that and also eared grebe down there. And then I was also in the group that spotted the bare-throated tiger heron in Texas.
Oh, that's so
So that
cool.
was like our tour group that we had, like when it was first seen. So that was really neat.
Also, we should probably shout out Nathaniel, friend of the program. He
Sure.
found a tufted duck in the
Yeah.
middle of a bunch of scaup on Lake Michigan one winter.
Nice.
So that was a great find.
Yeah,
Oh,
it's
that's
definitely
amazing.
satisfying to find a rare bird on your own.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I was okay, I'm not even gonna lie. I asked that question just so that I could tell the story. So I'm just gonna be
You're like,
transparent here.
when are they going to be done talking about this so that I can share mine?
this was just a few months back, actually. The tour that I co-led back in November, it was arrival day, so most of the participants were flying in to California from the Midwest, so there were just like two or three of them that had arrived ahead of everyone else. So we decided, the other leader and I decided, okay, well, let's just take them out birding, you know, just for a, you know, short little jaunt, you know, in some local areas. And so we took them to a place called Clovis Botanical Garden, which is, you know, right here in town. And, you know, we didn't expect to find anything other than a lot of the usual suspects for this time of year. So I was showing them, you know, like the gambles, white crown sparrows we have all over the place here, getting them their lifer white crown sparrow. And there were tons of, you know, Anna's hummingbirds in this area. So, and there, of course, it's a botanical garden, so they've got all these, you know, big blooming shrubs and plants and just a really pretty area. And then I remember we're walking up to this one bush. I forget what it was called, but it had these really large orange tubular flowers. And I remember remarking as we were approaching it, this is going to be a really good bush for hummingbirds. And I kid you not, like maybe 2 seconds later, I hear this familiar yet out of place scolding chatter that was sort of reminiscent of a ruby crown kinglet, but definitely wasn't. And I take a look and I'm like, oh crap, that's a broad-billed hummingbird. They are not supposed to be here. So it was like, I'm not in Arizona. What are you doing here? So that was really cool. So I immediately sounded the alarm. There's a handful of people that I reach out to first, you know, on the rare occasion that I find something rare. And yeah, it turned out that was a first for Fresno County. So that was really exciting, a really exciting moment. You know, my tour group and I found this county record. So that was really, really cool. That was, yeah, we felt like heroes in that moment. So that was awesome.
So I may be wrong about this, but wasn't it you that found a rare warbler in your county too at some point?
Prothonotary warbler,
yes,
actually.
I thought it was a prothonotary.
Yeah,
I didn't want to guess wrong, though.
That was another fun situation. Well, I was by myself, but it was September of 22. And I remember we were in the middle of this like terrible heat wave. And they were basically telling people, you know, don't be outside if you don't have to. It's awful out there. Well, this one morning, I was like, okay, do I want to get up and bird, you know, before the heat sets in, or do I want to just lay here in bed? I was this close to just laying there in bed. Something told me, like, wait, no, let's go. We won't stay out there for very long, but let's go. Well, I'm glad I did, because I'm standing by this pond and I see this impossibly bright yellow, all nearly orange bird flying from one oak tree to another. And my first thought was, that is a weird looking oriole, because Prothonotary warbler, like, not on my radar at all. Like, no, not for here anyway. You know, this is Fresno. And then it clicked to me all of a sudden, like, wait, that's not an oriole. That's a Prothonotary warbler. So I got a better look at it and like confirmed it 100% and sounded the alarm. And some birders showed up, and luckily it showed itself, and it turned out that was a county record. So that was cool. And that one hung out for a few days. But the broad-billed hummingbird that I mentioned prior to that, that guy actually hung out really reliably at this one bush for a few weeks and was very aggressive and was chasing off all these Anna's hummingbirds that were trying to forage there. I mean, it was really cool to watch. So people were coming from all over to look at it. So that was really, really cool. But yeah, I get too excited over these things. What can I say?
Yeah, one of my friends in Louisiana had green-breasted mango hummingbird showed up at her feeders.
Oh, at her feeders?
Yeah. She like has her yard really optimized for birds. So like she'll get cool stuff that shows up. I went to go see a bullock's oriole there 1 year. So I was like already familiar with
nice.
It. I got to glimpse it when it was there, but it didn't give great looks when I was around. But it's a really cool yard bird.
Oh, for sure. So yeah, like how many people here in the US can say, oh yeah, I've seen a green-breasted mango in my backyard at my feeders. Like, that's so cool. Like that's some serious bragging rights right there for sure.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We should probably put up a hummingbird feeder. Just like see what happens.
Well, it's interesting because in Louisiana you get the winter hummingbird season. So like people that do leave their feeders up longer than like the usual time, sometimes you do get cool stuff that shows up.
Here, I mean, you can get Rufus. Somebody had and Allen's once at their feeder.
First State Record.
Oh, yeah.
We got to go.
That was
pretty
cool.
Yeah.
Occasionally, nice. Anna's are here. I think there was a few records of green-breasted mango here, I think, actually. At least one.
Might be thinking of Violet Ear.
No, I
Mexican
think there was
Violet
the green-breasted Ear. Mango before we got into birding.
Maybe.
I think they had one in Wisconsin, I think. And there was a Violet Ear as well. So, I mean, that stuff. Those and flycatchers, it feels like, are the most likely to be vagrant. Like, severely vagrant.
Great ground, Rosie Finch.
Yeah, we got
Rosie
Finch recently. That was cool.
Yeah, I saw that video. Oh, that's amazing.
It was that a Western so bird. Cool.
Yeah, we got a little Western bird place going on.
Yeah, you could get the rosy finch, the Townsend solitaires, and the golden eagles. And there was a lot of Townsend solitaires. Usually in that place, you can get like one or two per year, but there was like probably six or seven, which was really neat.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So just a really good year for them. Oh, that's cool.
It seems to be, yeah.
Nice.
Well, cool. Rachel, do you have anything to add before we kind of sign off?
I don't think I have anything to add that I haven't already said, but I'll reiterate that if people want to inquire about birding tour in Central California, check out my website at centralcaliforniabirdingtours.com, or check out my Instagram, tanager_girl, to see some of the birds I photographed and kind of more of what I do. But yeah, it was great being on here with you guys. Great catching up. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And if you want to see kind of what the experience is like, we have a bunch of those California videos on our YouTube channel, Badgerland Birding. So make sure to check those out and make sure to check out Rachel's website. Would definitely recommend her if you're in the area to see some cool birds out there. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, please consider giving us a rating. That really helps us out. Thanks for watching this episode of the Badgerland Birding Podcast.